the America's Jobs Team podcast. For economic developers, by economic developers. Join the Consultant Connect team every Tuesday and Thursday for discussions surrounding the latest in our industry.
Learn from fellow economic development heroes, get leadership advice, keep on top of industry trends and shifts, and so much more. You are a part of America's Jobs Team.
And we're so glad that you're tuning in. Hey, listeners, welcome back to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I am Faye Davis. I'm here with the one and only Carla Sones. Carla, how are you doing today?
Well, Faye, I am excited about today's conversation because I feel like learning leadership lessons through other people's sharing their leadership lessons is always, I learn so much from when other people share their leadership lessons with me.
Yes.
And so now we get a chance to do that with the listening audience. So that's exciting, and it feels vulnerable.
Oh, 100%.
Because you have to, you know, just share a little bit about
kind of open
moments
the
that you're like, yep. You know, that was just not my best,
not my finest moment.
Yeah,
and I totally agree. So I was gonna say the same thing. I'm excited to talk about this together. Also, you know, we don't always want to put those things out there for everyone to listen to, but it's just like you said. Some of my favorite conversations on this podcast have been when people have shared their toughest lessons learned. And they always come with this really awesome backstory that you can totally relate to. And then the lesson that comes out of it is like, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of it that way. So why don't you kick us off?
Okay. So leadership lesson, one of them that I learned, and this is kind of embarrassing, but it all kind of centers around what now I would say is setting reasonable expectations for your boss or manager.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take you back to the earlier years of my career. And I really felt like I had a very solid understanding of what it meant to be a good leader. And thus, it's really easy to mentally create a scorecard
mm-hmm.
of what good leadership is. And when you experience from somebody what it's not, you start checking like, well, they're not doing this and they're not doing this. And so I found myself in a situation where I probably was mentally like kind of rating somebody's leadership, okay? And what I realize now, you know, I switched jobs. Like I ended up being like, you know what? I need to move to another job, which is not a bad thing. But what I realize now is that I was really more judgmental than I would ever like to even admit about what that boss or leader should be doing.
Right.
And not doing. And part of that was I didn't understand the complexity of the business. So it's really easy to be like, this should be your number one thing when you don't know like 60 other things, right?
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, circling back to the lesson, you know, learned here is that as I have continued to evolve as a leader and taken on different teams, different projects, led Consultant Connect here for the last couple of years, I feel like I have constantly been reminded of just how naive my younger self was around this vibe that almost to be a good leader, you had to be a good leader for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not true. Like what you value in a leader as Faye Davis and what Carla values in a leader as Carla Sones, we might not have the exact same needs from a leader on our scorecard.
Right.
And our needs for the leader could change based on the different season of life or career that we're also in.
Right.
So then now I look at it and I'm like, gosh, like as a leader, you to be a good leader, you have to be a great leader to every single person in the organization and in their season of life in the organization, you're bound to fail. Like you're bound to fail on somebody's scorecard, right? So it's made me really think about like, what good leadership is. And that's why I'm big on like having your own leadership values and understanding that you can be a great boss and manager, but you're not going to be the perfect leader for everybody or everybody in each season of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's also important that everybody take responsibility for finding leadership where they need to in the season of life that they're in. Like set realistic expectations for your boss and your manager and know like, this is what their strengths are, and I'm going to get as much as I can from those and maybe learn from a few of their cracks as well. But I'm going to go seek leadership in other places too to offset what maybe we're not just not in the right season alignment for, or maybe I've outgrown a little bit, or maybe they don't have that same skill set and I need it from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've learned like You can't be all to everybody. You can't expect somebody else to be all for you. And you need to really be aware of what you need in a season so that you can go find the right leadership that you need in a season and not be so disappointed if the person who you like report to isn't that person in that season. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're a bad leader. It doesn't mean that you've outgrown them. And every time, sometimes it does, but it doesn't mean you always have outgrown them. Like, it just means you need something else for a little while.
And I like that so much. It hones so deep on like, not only that self-awareness of what, you know, you need to know what you need to be led, but you also are giving yourself that grace of like, we talked about it in one of our previous episodes of that you can't grow without understanding where you have went wrong in the past too. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. Okay. My first lesson that I'm going to share is that lesson around not only that failure is data, but it's failures are data to support beginning again and again and again. So that's really one of those lessons that permeates my whole entire life now. And I learned it pretty early on in my career that as a kid, I always had this like fear of failure. I wasn't good at admitting mistakes. I don't think anyone ever gets like really good at that, but I'm so much more comfortable as I get older with that. But I had this like shame complex about admitting any mistakes, admitting any weaknesses. And in that shame motivation, it prompted me to always keep things like everything to myself. If something went wrong, if something, you know, needed help from someone else, I kept everything to myself. And so in this previous job that I had, my boss really started actively coaching and activating those habits that I had and like redirecting them. Because I'm a very social person and I'm very hungry and I like to talk with bosses. I like to have those coaching conversations because it actually energizes me, and my boss recognized that in me and started giving me this freedom, this space to really mess up and then give me the opportunity to come to him and give that to him, like report that back on my own timeline. And then every time that happened, it was really rewarded with that, like, it's not the end of the world. You know, okay, it costs us X amount of dollars for like a learning lesson, but just actively coaching around and like reinforcing that mistakes aren't the end of the world. You're not going to lose your job. You're not going to get yelled at or anything like that. So when I joined Southwest Michigan First, it was one of those like burgeoning lessons, but Ron really started to cement that in me as well, is that leadership theory he has of like fail fast. And I have so appreciated that in the culture here, because we get to try new things. And if it doesn't work out, we get to come to our mentor partners and say, I don't think that this is working. And so around all of that is all of this data. Every time you mess up, every time you make a mistake, every time you attempt a project and it doesn't work out, you create this like huge database of knowledge that allows you to start again in a different way. So maybe it's the same project from a different angle. Maybe it's a completely different project, but you take those lessons with you. And it's this whole just continuing cycle that I have absorbed into my whole life is to really practice failing at things regularly. Start picking things up that I might be really bad at, which is not my favorite thing to do. I hate trying new things that I know I'm going to be bad at. But I have to start doing those things, and nothing has humbled me to smithereens like motherhood quite has. But it's this opportunity every single night where I, you know, or not every, we don't have bad nights every single night, but I have this opportunity to talk to my kids when we have bad days and we talk together about, wasn't a good night, was it? And sometimes it was the kids that weren't having a good night, and sometimes it's me that's not having a good night. And we talk together around what can we together do to improve and start again tomorrow, because every single day you get to restart. And I love that. Like, that is my favorite thing.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself like, I feel like so much of what you said, I totally relate to and kind of probably grew up in that a lot of that same way. Like, you know, just even like I look back at like getting really stressed out about like a percentage point difference on a grade and like really, really kind of like freaking out. And the evolution to where I'm at now, where I look back and you almost can't recognize that same person who was so uptight about failure, because you've kind of been able to spread your wings and like experiment a little bit and you've embraced that experiment. Are there things that trigger you where you're kind of like, oh gosh, it's happening again. Like I can feel myself, you know, kind of falling back into that like scared to fail space?
Oh, I mean, of course, I'm not good with like, and you and I just had a conversation around that. I am really not good with like just empty airspace because I immediately fill it with negative in my head. So when that starts to happen, I get into this zone of like, I start getting like the belly aches. I start getting like that really tight feeling in my chest where you start moving away from wanting to have that dialogue. And then when you are confronted with that opportunity to have dialogue around it, it's hard and it is emotional and it is really hard to admit failure or to admit defeat or to admit mistakes. But after the fact, it's so cathartic to me that it gives me always new energy. And mm-hmm. it happens at home, it happens at work. And it's that constant like want to be better, that mm-hmm. want to do better, to want to keep growing. Because if you let that fear of failure stand in the way, you will never grow. You will just stay stuck exactly where you are. And I never want to be that person. So there's so many different situations that might bring that up. But it's always, and it helps me to have someone or a system that always brings me back to that recalibration conversation. Because even in my previous job, I would actively avoid the conversation until it was like prompted to me. But it always brings me back to like, that wasn't the end of the world. And I don't have to move to Florida to start all over. You know, I can have conversation. You can do hard things and it's okay to do that.
Yeah. And there's something about like just adopting that growth mindset that when you start to feel that like, why am I feeling that stomach tightening? And mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, because I don't like this feeling and it gives me anxiety or whatever you want to call it. And then knowing like, okay, like in order to resolve this, I have to, like, it's action time. Like, yes. I have to do something, say something. It could be hard. It could be not hard, but like there's prompting to action in order to grow. I think that's really cool.
Okay. You're up.
Okay. So my next one. So this one is even, I think, in some ways more embarrassing than the first, right? Also has to do with a little bit of an earlier time, but I really will admit it's not like so far off.
I don't think your first one was embarrassing. I think it was very relatable.
It was relatable, but I look back and I'm like, Carla.
Sweet, naive
you were,
Carla.
You were really such a brat. I really do. Okay. So this one is more about like, there have been times, and I think, you know, with more years of experience, you always gain wisdom. And I'm able to look back at not so distant times in which we're working on a project and I failed miserably at really getting wisdom from other people who had more experience or connection to that project. Okay. And I approach things like like you, Faye, like I'm not super scared to like take a risk anymore as long as it's reasonable and somewhat well thought out. And I, once we decide we're going to do something, I'm probably quicker to action than most mm-hmm. in that, which means like you take in, you kind of do a scan and then you keep moving. And what I've realized is that a lot of getting good wisdom means like you've taken time to really truly listen. And that doesn't mean just like a quick listen. It means you've built enough of a relationship to get the real truth mm-hmm. in listening. And there's so much wisdom a lot of times around the table that you can write off so easily of it's going to take too long, or that's just the old way of looking at things, or we're trying to do something different, or, you know, they're not with us in this change process, you know, like they don't like change or what. You can label it all different ways. But I look back and I think, gosh, like I really didn't honor some people that came before me in various situations and ended up like having to almost personally experience the pitfall mm-hmm. that they were trying to tell me about. But until I felt it, I wasn't willing to hear it.
Yeah.
Like just couldn't hear it. Now, I think part of that is like we all are, you know, young and inexperienced and you have to do that to a certain extent. But what I've learned is that there's a lot of wisdom and experience around, and you really need to lean into that. And one really key takeaway for me is like, just don't underestimate that wisdom that comes before you. Like the person who did your job before you, the people who have been a part of a project that maybe have been around the table for a long time. And now there's new and fresh energy, but they've been there for a while and there's a lot of wisdom there, even if they're not seeing what innovation is on the horizon. There's still a lot of wisdom and history there. And if you act with kindness, if you're empathetic and you kind of always act with integrity and can draw on some of that wisdom, you're much more suited to like for to have people appear later in your life in multiple ways. So we live in a world in which it feels like you cannot take somebody seriously in one area of your life. And next thing you know, like you're applying for a job.
Yeah.
Well, you're applying for a job that they also work there.
Yeah.
Or you look back and you need, they had the critical buy-in from a group of consumers that you needed. And if you would have just listened and worked through that, you would have had a more natural, clear path.
Yeah.
It would have taken longer.
Yeah.
And so a lot of lessons learned, and you can look at it generationally, because a lot of times the people who have so much wisdom have been a part of the process for a little bit longer. And whether that's age or just time of being a part of a project, I keep going back to like, there's this generational wisdom of you've seen things, like you've seen and experienced things over and over again.
Yeah.
And seen things evolve. And I don't think I took that seriously. And I think it was a huge mistake and a moment to like sit back and think like, gosh, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like I want to learn from that. And really, anytime you're a part of a new process or a new experience or a new group of people, like really lean in to the wisdom and experience around the table.
So how does that shape the way that you work now within when you're approaching new projects or new risks maybe or new business opportunities? How does that lesson shape the processes that you have in place for yourself?
Well, I think, you know, for a while, I think I felt like, and it probably is because I maybe truly didn't know what I was doing. And so you felt like you kind of had to come to the table with the solution pretty baked. And now I think I look at it a lot more of like, my first instinct of new project is like, who might have done this before me and have insight into what worked and what didn't? And, you know, as you're kind of going along, like who might have stakeholder feedback that could be beneficial to this project. You know, you start thinking about it. And so you're shaping whatever strategy or whatever you're working on alongside people. And it doesn't mean that they're included in every aspect of every conversation. It doesn't mean that you aren't kind of putting meat on the bones like as you go just to be able to present to somebody at the end. But I think I'm much more open to that feedback. And I think I've really just recognized that having across generational, across industry group of people that you can call and say like, hey, have you ever been like worked on this before?
Mm-hmm.
Like having that kind of mentorship circle or just influence circle, I think has been really beneficial.
I think
but it takes intentionality to build it.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good lesson for anyone because it is so easy to fall into that trap of, you know, we're changing the way things are being done. So we don't need the old guard at all anymore for anything. And that's where your historical wisdom lives. And you can't learn from how things were done and make them better if you don't understand a lot of that history.
Absolutely. And a lot of times that old guard, if you look at it in that perspective, again, you can have a lot of buy-in attached to the old guard. And so you cut a certain segment out and then you're working, you create a whole nother problem of trying to get that same segment back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that. Okay. My last one is the double-edged sword of strengths and how my biggest strengths are also my biggest weaknesses. So it's not really one specific situation that has taught me this, but I was recently confronted with it once again, and it brought it to the forefront of my mind, which actually gave me the idea for doing this podcast because I love learning from other people. And there's always these great stories that precede these great lessons. I don't have a great story, but I'll tell you what, some of my biggest strengths are one that I am hungry. I am hungry and I'm ambitious. I like to run really fast. But that can sometimes turn into one of my biggest weaknesses, and it stresses people out. And so I'm in this learning phase with one of our colleagues, and you know, we were having lunch, and she was like, I love that you want to learn, and I love how passionate you are about this work, but you're stressing me out. And that's one of those moments where I was like, you're right. you're right. Like, you're right. And I need to be opened up to those blind spots of like, it is okay to want, it is okay to learn. It is crucial to keep learning. It's crucial to create new skills. But how are you going about doing that? Are you going about doing that with these blinders on where you have tunnel vision? You're just going for what you need? Or are you doing it in more of that collaborative sense? So that's one of my biggest strengths. It can also be the sword that cuts me down at my knees. Another example is that I am super consistent, like to a point where it probably gets annoying. And I know it annoys my husband. And so this is more on like the personal side, but this lesson around you can't treat everybody the same way. And so my consistency, it's such a power, right? When we're looking at like how things look, how processes operate, how we, you know, report metrics, how we have brand standards, like this is a necessary skill. And I love that I have that skill, but I also have to actively pull myself out of this tendency to also then treat everybody the exact same. And so my biggest wake up call to that was when my daughter was born. I had a really hard time bonding with her for the first 2 weeks of her life because I was using all of these problem solving techniques and all of these skills that I had gained with her older brother, who's 2 years older. And I was not taking into account that this is a new human. I need to get to know her. I can't just throw one size fits all solutions at her. So that was probably the most like humbling experience that I had with this consistency. And you have to treat people the way they need to be treated. But it comes to play all the time. It's in the way that we interact with our team, the way I interact and the way that Paige and I are, Paige on the Consultant Connect team is our graphic designer and she does a lot of our social media and communications. The way I interact with Paige is so vastly different than how Cynthia and I work together or how Nick and I work together or how you and I work together. And I have this thing, it's always in my brain where I want things to be consistent and even across the board as much as possible, but you cannot do that with humans. Like you just cannot. And it's this whole thing where constantly I get just reminded, not just about the consistency piece, but these strengths that I have, these talents that I have that I work hard to have them be assets can just as quickly cut me down at the knees and humble me down and create my own biggest failures.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, you put it into strength language, but I think part of that is just like humanity, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, as humans, like when you look at the hierarchy of needs, like safety, security, food, like we really are hardwired for that feeling of like safety, security, you know? And I think so many times at work, like you find yourself reacting out of a place of like, I'm not getting this basic need met. And it really is like you look at it and you're like, well, gosh, like every human is so different and you can't apply that one size fits all to everybody, even though systems help.
Oh, systems are great.
You know, it's fascinating. I think it's a great one.
Okay. Well, that's all I have for you today, Carla. I think your two leadership lessons are up as well. But I love these kinds of things. I love sharing these kinds of things. And it does. I'm probably going to go home tonight and be like, oh, vulnerability hangover. But it feels good to share that kind of stuff because you never know how what you've learned or what I've learned can help other people, you know, maybe with some hurdles that they're trying to cross right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think some of the greatest thing is like they called them failure labs for a while. I don't know if they're still really a thing, but people would kind of talk about their failure in front of you and you could like learn from it, right? And I think it can be really powerful. And so those leadership lessons, I think, can be really powerful for people. So hopefully somebody heard something today that like, I don't want to go down that road.
No, don't.
Or I can relate to that and just thank you. I'm not the only one.
or maybe they're like halfway down that road and they can course correct.
Yes.
That would be even better. All right, Carla, it's been another awesome conversation with you. Thank you for joining me. And we can't wait to be back in the very near future with you all.
Yes.
Thanks for sticking with us till the very end. This podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment, Lead Generation for Economic Development, and Gazelle AI. Spend more time closing, less time chasing. Did you like what you heard today? Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Jobs Team podcast is audio engineered by Andrea Fuller and produced by Faye Davis.